This show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. Thanks for tuning in. And I give a shit. You know, I was just listening to Democracy Now right before we got on the air. Did you guys hear that? I mean, we're talking about concentration camps, you know, and that seems very real. Like they're saying, why are we calling these detention centers detention centers? They're concentration camps. They're concentration camps for children. Yeah, we got to get real about this, folks, because this is coming to your neighborhood soon and you don't even know it. Anyway, thanks so much for listening in. I have this really, really amazing guest for you today, Reverend Jen Miller, I've actually had a girl crush on her. I think she knows this. Hi, Rev Jen. Do you know that? I've had a girl crush on you for like ever, like since the 90s. And she's incredibly brilliant, talented, and a great on-the-air guest. So, but before we get to Reverend Jen, I want to remind you that we have apps that you can download. Radio Free Brooklyn apps. Did you know this? So you don't have to like be near your computer. You know, we all like listen to stuff on the go now. And the thing about Radio Free Brooklyn that's so great is that they have so many different options and so many different kinds of music and talk. And there's like, you could just have fun finding, like there's a lot of discovery to be had. So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/iPhone if you have an iPhone, or go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/Android, if you have one of those Androids. You know what it is, don't you? I'm not going to explain this to you. Okay, so before I get Reverend Jen on the line here, I mean, she's on the line, but before we really get started, let me just give you a little bit background about her so you know what we're dealing with, okay? Because Reverend Jen is a totally... there is no one like Reverend Jen. If you don't know who she is, I mean, you might likely know who she is. But anyway, she is an incredibly accomplished artist, performer, people leader, charismatic person. She's written some books. A lot of her work, her books are handmade. She's published 2 books. Or 5 books or something like that. But a lot of her handmade works are also in museums like MoMA and you have to go and read the thing. But she did write this book, this one favorite book of mine, if I'm just going to push one thing and focus, which is good advertising, is A Live Nude Elf. It's a genius book. It's one of my favorite books ever, and you can get it wherever you get books. And if you want to have some Reverend Jen experience, that's certainly a good one, although there are many, many other ones. So, hi, Reverend Jen.
Howdy.
How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. I'm chillaxing in the AC in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. That's nice. So you and I are going to have a chat, but if people do want to call in, we'll just tell them right now that they're welcome to 718-928-9732. That's 718-928-9732. So, Reverend Jen, you know, we were talking about you at the latest Miss Subway meeting, Miss Subway Planning. So for those of you who are not initiated, I, Dr. Lisa, am the current Miss Subways. I won that title in a incredible event that was a benefit for the Riders Alliance and the City Reliquary. And Reverend Jen had a big role in making the whole thing happen, but beyond that, she created the incredible Miss Subways crown, which
I forgot about that.
Which I have worn proudly in every Miss Subway's appearance. So, Reverend Jen, one of the things that we were discussing at the latest Miss Subway's meeting is what we would do about next year's crown. And so I think we're going to have to ask if you will make another crown.
Of course I'd make another crown. Oh. I had a lot of fun doing that. I'm going to need a lot more little toy rats and roaches and things, though.
Okay. All right. That's good, because I was hoping I would get to keep the crown.
I think you should keep the crown. It would be wrong to try to take it away from you.
Well, you know, that's it. How it works. That's how it works in these pageants, you know.
I know. I don't know. Mr. LES, we always make the Mr. Lower East Side give the crown back. But I think with Miss Subways, it's different. Because you've been rocking it. You know, Mr. Lower East Side pageant, I give them the crown, and then they just do nothing with it.
Okay, well, quite honestly, I have been rocking it, and it's not in the pristine shape it was when I first got it. I mean, I'll just be honest with you about that. And there
I never claimed to be a professional crown designer.
Well, you are. I never claimed to be a you know what? I didn't have the staff to maintain the crown that, you know, Miss Universe has. I think that's a big problem right there.
So, well, I think we need to make a video of all of the special things that you've done as Miss Subways to show before, you know, you hand over your title.
Oh, that's an idea.
Like helping people jump the turnstile or duck under it. Going to MTA court to fight for our rights to jump the turnstile.
I like that idea.
As you might have guessed, I owe some money for ducking under.
I like that idea. Like ways to beat the Subway.
A little teary-eyed, though. My year as Miss Subways has been so special. Here's what I've done, you know.
Yeah, I've tried to spread the word about the Subways. People seem to... I have no problem getting people to take the Subway. It's packed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I have
a lot of riders on there.
I think I had something.
Point A to point B.
I know. I think I might have had something to do with that.
You should claim that it's totally you that got people to ride the Subway. So it has nothing to do with the fact that it is basically the only viable form of transportation from borough to borough.
No, it's because I've been promoting the Subways that now the ridership has gone way, way up.
And they look great, and they run so efficiently.
Well, I have to tell you one thing that I did learn from being Miss Subways this year is that people really hate the Subway.
It took you being Miss Subways to figure that out?
Well,
boy, oh boy.
No, but see, the thing is, I thought that I didn't realize I am now a party to some of the vengeance that people have to the Subways.
Oh, no. Have you been beaten up?
Not physically, but emotionally. People think that I somehow can do something about fixing
they
the Subways.
They like the Subway.
Exactly.
It's like Miss Universe doesn't necessarily like the universe. Miss America doesn't necessarily like America.
No, but
we get a really angry Miss America.
I know that would be
She answers every question in peach. Right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that make for the best pageant?
You know what? I think that would be great. We should do a Miss America pageant and get like somebody who's really articulate about
platform.
What?
Let's get like Rachel Trachtenberg, someone really young and cute that could ostensibly be a Miss America, to run for it and actually get in the pageant and then just cause all sorts of mayhem.
I would love that. Do you think we could get her to do it?
Yeah, let's get Rachel to do it. She's perfect.
She actually is kind of perfect. She could
and
be really adorable. Subversive.
Yes, she would. We need to train, like Miss Congeniality. Let's put in agents in, you know.
Do you think that they do research where they actually find where they would do background checks on her and find out, you know, she had like protested something? No.
Well, they didn't with what's her name, Vanessa Was that her name?
Vanessa Williams. She was a classmate of mine at Syracuse. I mean, I didn't know her then, but yeah.
Most successful Miss America ever.
Is that right?
Well, she's been on television and in films and, you know.
Well, yeah, you're right. She has
a bad
kind of,
idea. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. And she's.
I think it was Hustler.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know. Nowadays, you know, I mean, you can be the first lady and have appeared in a few lesbian films. So I guess maybe times have changed, right?
Good point. Yeah. Remember, yesterday it was Michelle Obama showing her bare arms. Woo! Now it's like. But, you know, I got no problem with Melania posing naked. I wish more people should.
No,
I just have a problem with the fact that she stands by her man.
I know. I think Melania, I call her a prostitute. I don't like to say hooker because I think hooker's disparaging to real prostitutes.
Well, yeah, prostitute and hooker is, those words, you know, they generally mean you get the money up front, which I hope she did.
Oh, yeah.
Whore, but I love whores too. I mean, no, you know what? It's sort of an insult to whores and hookers.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
We need to figure out a new, she's like a sugar baby.
She's.
Even that's bad. I don't know. People
no,
do what they got to do,
but
you don't have to go that far as to marry that beast.
Well, the problem I have is the hypocrisy. Like, she.
Right.
If she. I wish she would just come out and say, you know, I'm fucking Donald Trump because look at all I get for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be cool
but
with
who
that.
Wants that. Well, now that we've psychoanalyzed Melania, there's some deep-rooted problems there. I don't know.
Well, you know, I also think, you know, in all fairness, we Americans, we in our no health care, but at least. There's a lot of food banks and stuff. You know, there are resources here, and we are not afraid of gangs. You can live without gang violence if you want to, even if you're homeless. And
I'm not really afraid of anything. Come at me.
Yeah, no,
I'm
not
afraid of fear.
No, I know you are the original fearless person.
Yeah, but I'm afraid of fear. I have anxiety about just, like, walking across the room.
Yeah, you've had anxiety, right? How is it that you're so fearless, but you have anxiety? I find that because you really, I mean, you are very daring, no? I mean, you are. Tell us, tell us, like, something really that, I mean, from your perspective, what have you done that's daring from your perspective? Because everything, from my perspective, everything you do is daring. But from your perspective.
Decided to become an artist. No, I mean, honestly, maybe being a sex columnist and using my real name and owning it, you know, because you get a lot of flack from people when you write extremely detailed accounts of your sex life. You
okay,
know?
Well, then, why don't you describe, you did it for Science, which I loved. Yeah. I loved that column. So why don't you describe that and explain tell us one of the, like, craziest experiences from doing that column.
Okay, well, the column was with Nerve.com, and the idea behind I did it for Science is that I would set about to do an experiment and do it very much in the scientific method. You know, I would have a hypothesis and then the lab and then the conclusion.
But it was all about sex, going out and having a sexual experience.
I had to do something sexual, you know. So,
yeah, like the one that you did that stands out in my mind, just to give our listeners an idea, is that you were a stripper at a club in some really far place that, like, would have scared me just to take the subway. But that's just one that comes to my mind. So you go ahead. Yeah. So you were
talking about scary. Try walking in 6-inch heels, no, let alone dancing in them.
I can't even
I think the most terrifying one, but the funniest one, and the weirdest for sure, is when I went to a lunar party.
What's,
you know, lunars are balloon fetishists. They get off on balloons, whether it be, you know, inflating them or popping them. something about balloons. So I went to a lunar fetish party, and I got inside a giant balloon, and no one was paying attention, and it started to deflate around me, and I started to lose oxygen. And so I heard someone outside say, "Oh, shit," and then they put the air vac hose back in, and then it was wonderful. Then I could totally understand, like, maybe not the sexual element, but, like, it was really fun being in a balloon. But I talked to a bunch of lunars, why do you have this fetish, you know, et cetera. But the whole idea was that it was more than just interviews. Like, just interviewing lunars might be interesting, but actually trying to participate
yes,
in that lifestyle
exactly.
and do something as extreme as, you know how hard it is to get inside a giant balloon?
And I can't even picture it. You mean it's literally a balloon?
Yeah, it's like trying to get toothpaste back in the tube. You know, you have to, like, dive in with your hands. You know, like you're diving into a swimming pool, and then you're in, and there's this hose going in with air in it. And it's kind of fun. And then a dude jumped in with me, and we were playing with, like, you know, the balloon and hugging and kissing, and it was actually very sweet. I did other crazy stuff. I mean, people would write really obnoxious comments, and the girl that, she was kind of my girlfriend at the time, she was like, "I hate these obnoxious comments. Let's do something even more pornographic." So then we went for female ejaculation.
Oh,
and I
really?
I studied it like I was studying for the LSATs, you know? I can figure this out.
Did you go someplace for like a training thing or...
No, I bought Seymour Butt's Complete Guide to Female Ejaculation, which is a real handy guide.
Uh-huh.
And then some things at Babeland that were useful in, you know, the nubby G and finding the G-spot.
G-spot,
like
right. So do you believe so what did you learn? Is female ejaculation a real thing?
Oh, it's real, all right. I had to figure out how to turn off the faucet because I was doing laundry like every day.
Yes, so to speak.
It's named after Dr. Graffenberg. And if you put your fingers about 1.5 inches and thrust upward inside of the birth canal, a.k.a. the vagina, you will find something that feels a bit like a walnut. And if you press it enough,
wow, and where does this stuff come out?
Comes out of, like, basically, it's like
is there a squirter hole?
It's the urethral sponge. The urethral sponge holds all of this, like, female ejaculate. And then it's like a tidal wave. My first one was not very impressive. It was like a little splash.
That's funny because, I mean, we know what, you know, getting, you know, it's like getting wet, right? Isn't that what they call it? But I always thought of that as sort of a sweating kind of thing. Like it's sweating
it's
in there.
It's more of a faucet.
But it's not. Is that the same thing, like just getting wet and female ejaculation?
No.
No?
The urethral sponge is this part that, like, fills up. I'm no scientist. I'm not Dr. Graffenberg.
Well, you know more than I do.
Well, unfortunately,
you know a lot more than I do about this.
I became an accidental sexpert.
Well, I mean, let's say, or you know about the female body. These are things that are important. So
I lived in one for many years, and until I had that column, didn't know all the things that I know now.
Yeah, of course.
And
well,
it wasn't like sex was what I wanted to write about necessarily. I mean, I'd written a bunch of dirty stories and things before that, but I never expected to sort of, you know, write about that in particular.
Well, the thing that I loved about the column in particular was, you know, there were so many things, but one of the things that I loved was that you wrote about it in like a hilarious, like a subtly hilarious and distant way, so that it kind of from the point of view of a scientist or somebody reporting on it, a reporter, where it wasn't like you were talking about it from a pleasure or a turn on point of view. You were talking about it totally like scientifically. It was great.
Well, somebody wrote me a fan letter that just said, "I never laughed so hard while having a boner in my life." And I thought, that's kind of what I'm going for, you know? I mean, I hate this all, like, I'm writing erotica. I mean, I've written for Penthouse, and I've written stories that were designed specifically to bonerize or pitch pants tents or whatever. I know how to write erotica, but I thought that it was way more fun to write about it from a hilarious perspective. And the other thing, sometimes people would, especially dudes, would say to me, oh, I'm so jealous you get paid to have sex. No, if I got paid to have sex, then I'd be a hooker. If I get paid to write, and I wrote, you know, I wrote my ass off. But each of those columns was like, you know, over 3,000 words, and I had to work really hard at them, you know, to make them interesting. Because sex alone, lots of people have it. Look at all the fucking people out there. You know, sex alone is not that interesting, to be honest.
Well,
and
yeah.
So to make it interesting, I mean, I was getting carpal tunnel syndrome trying to find out what I was going to write about next.
Sure.
What am I going to do that's weird next?
So what was it like when you went out to that stripper place? Where was that?
Wiggles in Queens.
In Queens. And this is a while ago where no one ever went to Queens. That was, but like, what part of Queens?
I don't know, some big street. I don't
way out. Wait, was it scary? All I can think of is I would have been so freaked out. I would never have done it. I would have been way too afraid.
I was more scared because I had really low self-esteem, right? And I just become a stripper years ago. I didn't know that, you know, I also thought you had to have really big boobs.
Yeah, right. No.
And I also thought my body was not up to snuff to be a stripper. But I can dance, and so, you know, I guess that...
Charisma, so charm, beauty. Yeah, you got it.
I had to audition.
Really?
That was... Yeah, and then they're like, okay, y'all, can you come back next week? And I came back, like, a couple days later, and I hated it so much.
Why? What was it like?
Strippers work like 8 hours. I thought you show up and do a couple dances and make like $100. I go home. Yeah, I worked for like 8 hours, and all the other women were mean to me, and I snuck out. I had my buddy Bruce come in as like a fake customer, because I figured there is something, you know, you never want to do anything that's too risky.
Oh, not God, that's, well, you know.
That's not too risky. But, you know, to have a friend there, and so I danced over to him. I said, I mean, yeah, it's fine, 5 minutes. And I had to, like, do a ninja escape from the strip club, because I was like, I'm here to write an article. I didn't tell anyone, but I was thinking, I'm here to do a couple dances, write about it, and get the hell out.
Wow. So why were the other women mean to you? Did they see you as an interloper, say, or?
You know, I'm not sure. They would, like, try to have a conversation. And I'm always trying to make friends with people.
Yeah, you're the friendliest person ever.
And then they're like, oh, yeah, I know someone who's an Aquarius. And just, no, they just shut it. I got the steel door. But in other columns, people were super friendly, and I had lots of fun, you know. But that one, I was like, I kind of need a raise.
Yeah. And you were also, wrote some really great articles for ArtNet.
Yeah, ArtNet sort of saved me because I had started having a monogamous relationship toward the end of my nerve tenure, and the person I was with, he did not want me to write about us, and I thought, you know, I've always chosen art over everything in my life, always chosen writing over everything, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to choose having a stable relationship, and nerve was, they were not cool with that.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
And it was, you can't really have a sex columnist who can't write about their sex life, you know? They were honest. And so so I got canned, so to speak, or they canned my end of the column. People still do that column on Nerve, I think.
Really?
But I thought, well, what do I know about other than sex now? I know about art. And I remembered that Walter had bought
Walter
one of my
Robinson.
Drawings when I worked at... Modern Culture and had a show at Printed Matter like around 2003 or something. And I thought, I'll just write to Walter and I'll pitch this idea that because so much of their writing came from the perspective of art critics, I thought so many artists read that website to find out about art world goings on and things like that, that wouldn't it be interesting to have it from the perspective of a totally, basically, financially unsuccessful artist. It took me a couple like nudges to Walter to get me to, you know, do it. And then Jerry Saltz actually wrote to Walter and said, "I love Jen's work. I've been following her since she was at NERV," you know. So he got really good feedback on the first article. And, you know, God bless people who emailed them, because then I was able to write for them for, I don't know, 4 years or something. And,
yeah, so what did you do? Did you go around seeing, like, the underside of the art world, or what was that like?
Sometimes I would write about my personal life as an artist and my frustration, and other times I would like go to shows, but I always tried to make it experiential journalism, if you will, mm-hmm. where it's like, here was my night on the town, you know, so right. It's always about my favorite subject, myself, with
everyone's
the other being secondary. Sometimes I push it, like...
Hello? Did we lose Reverend Jen? Holy shit. Okay, Reverend Jen, so this is what I'm going to do, folks. I'm going to hang up right now, and I know that Reverend Jen's going to call back in a minute, and in the meantime, I'm just going to vamp. I'm going to tell you what's going on. No, you know what I'm going to do? It's time for a station break, for gut. Oh, hello?
Hello.
Oh, you're back. I was just going to do a station break. So why don't I do that? Because it's time anyway.
Okay. See you.
Hold on. Do you know what? This is what I want to promote. First of all, thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm here with Reverend Jen. Reverend Jen, say hello.
Howdy.
How great. Reverend Jen, say, like... Tell us how great Radio Free Brooklyn is.
Radio Free Brooklyn is pretty awesome.
It's a great station, right?
It's a great station. My pals Tom and Rob, everyone, basically, Radio Free Brooklyn is like the WKRP of Cincinnati, if everyone was existential.
There you go. I love that. That's got to be our new theme line. But you know what I wanted to tell people about also is this show. You should come to this, Rev Jen. Anyway, it's going to be at Pine Box on Monday, and it's by Tom Gallo, one of our hosts who's like a record geek, record music, like a genius music record. Geek knows everything and everybody.
He's a record collector.
Collector. Do you? Oh, you're friends with him, right? Or you
I
know
don't
him?
Know.
You don't
I'm
know.
I'm really burnt.
You guys are friends on Facebook, anyway. So
we're friends. That's real life.
That's real. That's his friend. That counts. It counts for something.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me tell you what this is. It's supposedly a revenge. Banned by Donald Trump because he wound up hating the Beatles because they had too many chicks or something like this. This is what he says. He referred to them as the loser Beatles, and now there's this band. According to Trump, all lyrics for the Trump Beatles were written by Trump himself, with absolutely no influence from any of the original Beatles songs. Though some may argue that similarities exist. So I think this band is going to be awesome. And it's Monday night.
Awesome.
Doesn't it sound fabulous?
So the Beatles are my favorite band, but maybe Loser Beatles might be my second favorite band.
I think it would be really good.
I think it sounds great.
Hello? Yeah, so anyway, they're going to be at Pine Box Rock Shop, L Train to the Morgan Stop, Monday, July 9th, starting at 9 p.m., and it's free, which is crazy.
So, free? If it's free, it's me.
Yeah, you got to come. You got to come.
I
think everybody, doesn't it sound really, really good?
It sounds great. I'm going to dress as like a crazed girl from the 60s. It's like,
that's a great
like ripping
idea.
My hair out and stuff.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Someone should carry me off on a stretcher.
Yes. We need screaming and crying fans.
Totes.
Yeah. Okay. I think it'll be a really good release. I like crying.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I have trouble crying. Do you ever have to? Yeah, I like want to cry so many times, and I just can't cry. Does that ever happen to you?
Yeah, sometimes it does, and then my default emotion is anxiety and panic. So crying. Whenever I cry, I'm happy because I go, oh, that means I won't have a panic attack. I'm crying.
Because you're getting it out. Well, I think that, but you, I mean, is it like the anxiety just blocks the sadness?
I think that when you find that you have an inability to express certain emotions like anger, I'm real bad at expressing anger. I'm real bad at expressing sorrow. Certain things that are the, I think, the most difficult to explain to people, that then you just settle for anxiety. Like, I'm anxious. I used to have this little picture of a kitten with newspapers all around it on my wall that said, the more I think, the more confused I get. And I think that's straight up. Sometimes I outthink my sadness or something like that. But I do a lot of crying, not lest anyone out there think I'm happy.
No, but
I don't want to give the wrong impression. Oh,
well, I think people, you know, I mean, you definitely cheer other people. You're good. You're great at cheering other people up. And that's really valuable. So you said you had low self-esteem, which we people have a hard time understanding. We people that see you, because you seem, you have, you know, a lot going. How could you have had low self-esteem? And then this is what people want to know, right? I mean, you have low self-esteem, but yet you could go out and do all that.
Well, I think having low self-esteem frees you up to do all sorts of things, because you honestly, at one point, you just stop caring. Whatever.
Fine. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, when I was 16, the cool kids in my neighborhood, and I was kind of a cool kid. I was a jock, you know, but not like popular cool. I was pretty cool, though. But I was also a total art fag, right? And so the cool kids in my high school that were a year younger than me actually painted "You are a art fag" in giant letters on the street in front of my house. Of course, there was a grammatical error. It should have been "an art fag." But I always think that that was like, my reaction was far from horror. It was like, well, now I'm the most famous artist on my block. So he had to come and gravel over it. It was sort of a pivotal moment in my career as a young artist.
That's awesome. So you were like, being an artist is great because you make up, you get other people. You get, yeah. So as a shrink, I would say that you got other people to express your anger for you. It must have been very satisfying.
Yeah, sure. You know, that's true, actually. I think part of an artist is your conduit for other people's emotions to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, you subvert them into your art, and then other people can experience them.
Right. That's a good insight.
Certainly, when I paint, like I'm looking right now at a painting of Reverend Jen Jr. as a pirate that I painted, you know, just a few days after she passed into dog heaven. And I painted it because I was in grief, and as long as I've been alive, basically, could walk and talk, I've been a painter and a writer. And painting it gave me a sort of facility to let that sorrow into something beautiful.
Yeah, I see you as a real optimist. Would you say you're an optimist?
I think...
Even under extreme circumstances, do you see yourself that way?
Oh yeah, I'm the person you'd want next to you in a war.
For sure. Yeah.
I'd be like, we'll figure out a way out of this.
For sure.
Car broke down because of the heat. I'm just gonna pray it'll happen.
You know what? In case you listeners out there don't know, I had interviewed Reverend Jennett several years ago for a project for the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And there's this one story that I want you to tell again, if you would, that I think really demonstrates how where some of that fearlessness came from. And I think it has to do with your dad. God bless him. And I remember what happened, how he handled it when your house got flooded. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, the steam pipe explosion?
Yeah. where you're...
Oh, no, the house in Maryland, our childhood home, when
yeah.
it got flooded.
Will you tell us that story? Oh, good. Okay, so go
our
ahead.
Our house was constantly flooded.
Okay, well, tell
Montgomery
us how
County,
many
Maryland.
Kids you had and how big the house was. Set this.
I have three older brothers and an older sister, and it was this sort of Brady Bunch house, but it was five stories because it was built on a hill. The basement was, like, way... real, like, you know, it's basement, but it was just constantly getting flooded to the point where we had, like, mushrooms growing down there, not the fun kind. And my dad...
Your dad was a judge. Like, I want people to know this, too. It wasn't like your dad was, like, a crazy hippie. Your dad was, like, a judge, right?
He was much crazier than a crazy hippie.
But
he
a really
fascinating.
But a real artist. But
yeah,
but function, high-functioning human who was also an artist and a judge.
He was, but he got out rafts, and like I only know most of this stuff from my older siblings, you know, because they have a better memory of the events that happened in our childhood because they're older than me. But that, yeah, we rafted around in the flood. It wasn't like a crazy flood, like the floods that happened in Maryland a month ago, then you don't want to screw around. But it was like, you know, maybe a foot of water.
But like, he didn't do the panic thing like most parents where they go nuts. They he actually just handed all the kids floats and made it fun.
Yeah.
I mean, how fabulous
is that?
It can
be very chill.
So
it can be very chill, you know. And I think, well, he's a war veteran. He was in the Korean War. And he lived a pretty interesting wild life. So I think that things that when you're a kid and you think these are catastrophic events, so it's like, no way can I deal with this. He was always a voice of reason, but also a voice of, like, buffoonery, you know? He did not appreciate pretentiousness in any form. He didn't suffer fools. So he liked that fun and just, you know, what else are we here? You know, when you're on your deathbed, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a bed, when you're about to go, you're not going to be wondering, like, did I do all of the right things? No, you're going to be like, did I have joie de vivre? Was my life fun? Did I, you know, live it to its utmost potential in terms of, you know, what I experienced in the now on a day-to-day basis?
Hey, you know, Reverend Jen, will you do an experiment with me right now?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody is trying to call in, but since we are on this phone, because I couldn't get you on the other phone, on my personal phone, I can't. Let's hang up, see if we and
okay.
stay and listen, and then see if that person, whoever it is, can call in and ask the question, and then we'll put you back. How's that?
Oh, this technology. So just call me, I guess.
When? Can you listen to us, and then when I hang up, call back.
I hang up
with the person,
sure.
who we're going to give that person a chance to call in. So
okay.
I'll vamp while you hang up and wait for that person. Okay.
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 Cool.
And then call me back when I say. I'll cue you over
okay.
the mic. It's a
okay,
very
now I gotta turn on my Radio Free Brooklyn.
Okay, turn on your Radio Free
okay,
Brooklyn, listen in. Okay, so I'll talk to you in a bit.
Okay.
Okay. So somebody's been trying to call into the station, I can tell. Do you want to try right now if you're listening? This is a little bit, we can do this because it's you know what I love about the station, and I say this at every meeting, every chance I get, every Radio Free meeting, I mean, not just any meeting, but this is what I say. I say that the best thing about doing this show is that unlike a lot of other creative endeavors that you do with other groups and other people, you know, you're being judged and being evaluated on all sorts of things. But, you know, like how much money are you bringing in, or how many listeners, or how much are you, you know, doing for us? But in this, with this station, it's really about the community. And we have like the best group of people, and everyone really participates in helping out and doing, you know, it's a nonprofit. So we just all do more than our shows. We look out for each other, and it's cool because I've never been involved. I've always been like I've always been like somebody that's worked alone on stuff. So I particularly appreciate being part of this station. So, Rev, that person's not calling in. We gave them our chance, so why don't you call me back, okay? So we'll have Reverend Jen call in a minute. I'm telling you, this woman has done everything. She is truly fearless. Anyway, I think that we may play a song while we get Reverend Jen back on the line. So I think A Man Without Love is the right song. What do you think? No? How about let's see. Oh, wow. Reverend Jen, are you there? Holy shit. Where did she go? This is what's happening now. I'm trying to manage all the music and everything all at once and trying to get in touch with Reverend Jen, which is really overwhelming for me. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my listeners. Don't. So, okay. Jesus, Reverend Jen, what happened to you? Call back. Let's see. I'm going to call her right now. All right. Okay, let's try calling her. Let's do this. Let's try calling her from this. Oh, wait. Okay, there we go. Reverend Jen?
Hey. Yeah, I had to actually, like, my internet went down right as I was trying. I had the sound turned down on Radio Free Brooklyn. I have a really bad effect on technology.
Oh, God. Well, you know, you and me together really got some slowed downtime here. I hope that...
So no one had a question?
Well, whoever was trying to call in didn't call in. But I promise you, you know what? I hope Tom doesn't find out about this. I'm in so much trouble here. I really screwed this up. I'm going to go home. I promise you, people. I'm going to go home and, like, find out how to manage this better for next time. And I apologize to you, Reverend Jen, for being so incompetent about the technology.
It's okay. I'm incompetent about technology.
I feel bad about
it. I'm still in my pajamas.
I feel bad about myself. Do you think people are being critical of me? I'm feeling really... I hear my mother yelling at me right now, like I didn't prepare right or something. Do you think she is? She's dead, but do you think... I feel like she's yelling at me.
Oh, so wait, but people should call into the 718 number, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how this works.
I don't know. You know what? I don't usually take callers because I have so many people. I usually have people in the studio. But we were trying something special today that I wasn't ready for. That's all. And I just want you to know, like, people should know that things go wrong. That's what I hate about editing. When you watch, I like watching live TV, even if it's the news or the Today Show or something, because on those shows, things always go wrong. And then when you watch, right?
They sure did at the Today Show.
What happened?
I love watching, Matt, wasn't that what Matt Lauer was on?
What happened?
Wasn't he accused of, like, sexual harassment or something?
Yeah, but that's
I love watching them.
That's not when he was on live. He didn't harass live.
I know, that would have been more interesting.
That would have been great.
I love watching the, it's not, I don't have to look at Matt Lauer's face anymore show.
I know, I hated him. I never liked him.
I hated him. Hoda's so much better.
I know.
You know what? I'm tired of people, like, firing people or whatever for things that they should have obviously been fired for, but they could have just rubbed it in a little bit more by being like, we're firing you because you suck. You know, also, you happen to have all these allegations. No one likes looking at your face in the morning.
How did he even handle, like, how did he even handle it? Do you know? Like, how did he get
to be a newscaster? Well, like, he's, like, the least charismatic, most unattractive individual. With apparently, like, a sexual fetish for fucking harassing people.
Well,
you know, like. Why are you on the air? Why do I have to look at you? I love the Today Show.
You know why? Because of Brian Gumbel and Jeff Zucker. I know this for a fact because I used to be a Today Show junkie and a long, long, long time ago. And after Brian Gumbel was leaving, Brian Gumbel was really good friends with Jeff Zucker. And he wanted Matt Lauer to replace him because they were bro brother sports guys together. And Matt Lauer was so incompetent and so uncharismatic and, like, disgusting. And after he got older, he looked really gross, just repulsive.
Yeah. I mean, everyone rips or talks about what female newscasters, like, you know, look like. Why can't we just say, like, Matt Lauer was ugly? We should have gotten rid of him. Like, I actually think that everyone thinks the world's becoming meaner and there are terrible things happening, but I think people should be even meaner. Like, everyone was like, I found that the one thing that made me piss off both liberals and right-wingers, you know, I would consider myself, like, basically an anarchist wishing we could have a monarchy so someone would just pay me to sit around and paint all day. But anyway, I'm a registered Democrat and probably a pretty moderate Democrat politically, if anyone would like to know. But was that when people were like, yay, go, everyone kicked Sarah Huckabee Sanders out of this restaurant. And John Foster was like, well, that's not very compassionate. You know, that's not seemingly what liberal people would do. And then some liberals were like, you know, oh, that's terrible. It should be, you know, people should be compassionate. And then right where it's like, damn those liberals, you know, all them Mexican speaking people. And I was like, they should have kicked her out because she was fat. She didn't need more cheese. Like, sorry, we're taking this cheese plate away from you. Get out. And that's super mean. But what if we all went that direction? It might be fun.
Well,
like instead of being compassionate and stuff, you're like, no cheese plate for you, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And then it removes all doubt about why she's being removed from a restaurant.
I totally agree. Like, why are we not calling people out? Like, why are people just not saying to Donald Trump, that's a lie, here's the facts? Like, why aren't, like, this is what bothers me. They say that on the news or MSNBC, that's what, you know, the crap I pay attention to. And they'll say it behind his back, but why is that not, like, more part, why is that not more directly, why is that not out there in a more direct way?
Exactly. I mean, people have become pussies. That's the problem on both sides. I want to start, like, I hate to use pussy in the pejorative. You know,
I know, I do it too, though. I do it too.
Vaginas or vulvas or what you will are all good, right? But actually, without the word pussy in the pejorative, the English language would be a lot less interesting. Just like, oh, are you guys FCC? Can I say all the bad words? I mean, I love them. They're part of my lexicon, you know? My mom's from Scotland. You don't think I grew up with the filthiest mouth on the planet? And then my father being a University of Maryland fan, like watching basketball, screaming the F word at the top of his lungs. I grew up with a filthy mouth. But I think that we need to, on both sides, stop being pussies, you know? Even like the neo-Nazis with their tiki torches, really, like, raided a pottery barn and that's badass. Like, I'm not calling for people to be, like, violent or anything. I'm simply saying people on the air should say what they think, you know?
I agree. I don't think it has to even be nasty. I just think it needs to be factual. I'm sick of these euphemisms.
Well, then, I mean, yeah, okay, so fatness, I'm not a fattest, okay?
Fattest, you mean against fat people?
Yeah, no, but the thing is, Trump called Kim Jong-un fat and short. Well, that's the fucking pot calling the kettle, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
at least he doesn't look like he's been wearing goggles to a spray tan every... Like, I wish I was, like, in North Korea to teach Kim Jong-un some, like, yo mama jokes, you know, to just throw at Trump. Like, no one... Like, and Hillary being like, when they go low, we go high. No, everyone, be infantile. I want it to be like a, there's your boyfriend debate. I want there to be a dance-off. I want people, you know... It's like, without hurting anyone, but like, when you're bullied and you're a little kid and you're a pipsqueak and someone, my brother's called me fathead like every day, I could take it, you know,
right.
And I'm not even in politics.
Right.
I'm a freaking artist. There's artists who are like, I take my work so seriously.
Oh, God.
And they're all weepy about it. Like, shut up.
That's why we get along. You and I are the same that way. This bullshit, like, taking yourself seriously.
Yes, the people taking themselves seriously is a big problem right now, I think, personally.
Oh, well, it always has been.
Yeah, actually, and that's why we need more buffoonery, you know. We need more stuff like the loser Beatles, and, you know, satire has never been more needed, or, you know.
Yeah, but...
And I actually, I think that there are a lot of writers and poets and that kind of thing that they sort of put down comedians, like it's this low level of art, but
yeah.
I think right now comedians are the ones that are making the most cutting edge art. Like,
I agree. I have said the same thing. I have said exactly the same thing. That's like where all the innovation is coming from.
The best writing, the best sort of dialogues, etc.
And they're the ones who are taking most of the heat, like Michelle Wolf, and, you know, they're getting the most notice, but taking the most heat.
Well, I've just, you know, now that we got, like, Hulu and a couple other things, because I'm trying not to go out as much, you know, trying to be less of a party girl and more of a TV-watching person in their pajamas.
Which is a different kind of party.
Yeah, I just started watching Breaking Bad, and I binge-watched it for 2 weeks, and I'm on season 5 now. And to me, also, in my totally unprofessional opinion, as the greatest television critic that ever lived, I think it's one of the best things I've ever seen on TV, because it's just dissecting capitalism, what's going on right now, how people get dragged into it, people taking themselves too seriously, all the things that are going wrong. I mean, who knows if art can change anything, if it can change the world, but, you know.
Right, but you know what's really interesting? It's so hard to enact change anywhere, especially in the government, but Donald Trump has enacted change bigger than anyone else, and I'm not saying in any way that's positive, necessarily, but I do find it remarkable about how he has changed our society, don't you think?
Absolutely. I remember on the brink of the Iraq war, first big protest in D.C., going down there, there's thousands and thousands of people, you know, just, and for me, it was very basic. It is wrong to invade another country. We have no proof that they have weapons of mass destruction, period. End of fucking story. Why are we going to war? And the lack of outrage outraged me. And now it seems that outrage is just sort of this everyday thing, even though there are some very basic things to be definitely outraged about right now.
Right.
The thing that you played before about the concentration camps, the detention centers for children, obviously, I wish we could just invade them, you know?
Yeah.
And other things like environmental disaster, you know, people died in Montreal this week from heat stroke, you know, like, no one seems to be talking about the environment enough. I mean, there's things, but what am I going to fucking do? I'm just an artist, you know?
Well,
I can be outraged. I can make art that addresses it. I can figure out every tube of paint I use. I'm like, oh, it's a tube.
I think the thing is that we all, like, everybody has, can, we all have to do the thing that we can do. But I also think that Donald Trump has opened up this avenue for people to talk more candidly, and the only person that's doing it is him. And so he's always going to win because he has no rules. The people with the less rules win. And so he's always going to, he has such an advantage because he can say whatever the fuck he wants. But we can all say.
It's a Machiavellian strategy to the person with the less rules wins. I mean, that's straight out of, you know, Machiavelli.
Well,
it's like he's using that.
Yeah, but why aren't the newscasters being just as blunt or just as honest? They're afraid of losing their jobs. They're all pussies.
Part of the pussification. You know when I think the pussification of America started?
When?
I actually wrote an essay about this like 20 years ago with Scrappy Doo. Remember?
No.
Right? Okay, you had Scooby Doo. Everyone loved. He was like a beatnik dog that just wanted his Scooby snacks, you know. And his best friend was a stoner, Shaggy. Well, then they bring along this little tiny, cuter Scooby-Doo. Well, Scooby-Doo was cute enough already, but they bring along the one that's all feisty and it's like, put up your dukes, and they tried to make it all cute, you know, without realizing that it was just annoying. So it's sort of the way I feel about newscasters right now. They're not brave enough, is for sure, except for the ones that are actually like, you know, a lot of journalists have... You do go missing and
yeah, they're brave in that
like
way.
That.
Well, that's a. I mean, you can't say they're not
that's
brave,
a whole
right? That's
a
whole different thing.
People,
but it's also the networks or whatever because they're afraid of getting fired, as anybody who has a decent job would be. But it's because the networks or their bosses, the people running these newsrooms, won't let them. I mean.
Yeah.
They have too many rules.
Yeah, too many rules.
So we need, there are publications or whatever, or sites or whatever, voices that don't have that many rules, but we need some outspoken people who are not we need rude people. That's what we need, Reverend.
Yeah, exactly.
We need more
Trump
rudeness.
Trump is the rudest person ever. And, you know, I've noticed, like, okay, he misspelled poor, you know, people pour over my books. And he wrote it like you're pouring a drink or something.
Right, yeah.
Well, the problem is that most people are C students. They don't look up to good spellers.
No.
Like, no one's going to follow you because you spelled the sentence right. No one is going to follow you because you did this. So he appeals to a large group of people that maybe are not academics, you know?
Right,
I
or
mean,
don't
right
value
now,
that.
I think, you know, it says a lot for America, you know, that his approval ratings are so low. But I think that right
well,
now...
Well, they're high in certain cases.
In some cases, but I think a lot of people are befuddled as to what to do. You know, I am. What do I do? Other than protest. And look where protesting, you know, got us when we were protesting the war. We're still at war. I don't even remember how many years ago that was. And people have died because of it. And that was the real collapse, I think, when it felt like, you know, voices were not being heard at all.
Yes. Yes.
It's like you can scream and scream and scream and you feel like nobody's listening. And you're just running into a brick wall.
Yes.
But there's going to think, I think you're right that, you know, he's a piece of shit, but he's opened up channels for people to be more honest, some of the root problems.
Yeah. Well, I just think people need to be more honest and we can't just, we got to stop dancing around the shit. But you know what?
Yeah, misspelled something.
We have to go because we only have a minute left, and I want to tell people about the next show that's coming up with Ilan Danziger. So
awesome.
I just want to say I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to say I loved having you on. Thank you so much, and you're a blast.
I'm glad I could be there, even though I'm not really there.
No, you were here.
Technology did not work in our favor, but hopefully I'll see you at Loser Beatles.
Yes,
really
everybody
great.
Must come to Loser Beatles. That's Monday. That's Monday, July 9th. Pine Box, be there. Okay.
All right.
Stay tuned
see
for
you, Lisa.
Ilan.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye. Love
you. Love you too. Stay tuned for Ilan Danziger. Lost and Rewound. He's hilarious. He has great music and great stories and great guests. And he's really competent. He's